And greetings. Thank you so much for joining us today. We are in studio, in-house. Myself, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, along with
Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamprone, naturopathic physician, herbalist, and so happy to joining with, which I think is one of our last programs of the year. We have a couple more, I guess, but really excited to be here with Dr. Kamai, the natural nurse, and talk about health, wellness, and alternative medicine today.
Well, today is certainly a special day, Dr. Z, because it is the winter solstice, and we'll be talking about
Not your favorite solstice, but nonetheless.
Oh, it's fine here in Florida. Yeah. It's absolutely fine. Okay, it's 82 degrees. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
It's gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful. So that's why I do the winter in Florida only, because I'm not a winter person. As that's what you were referring to, certainly.
Yeah.
But
winter is, you know, winter has its really amazing beauty. And actually, that's really a great time to be down in the tropics, because it's not as hot, but still is tolerable. How's usually the weather down where you are in Florida for the wintertime?
Oh, gorgeous every day. When we have a cold snap, we had a cold snap a few weeks ago, so then it went down to 57 a couple of nights, but back up to 70 or 80 during the day. So that's a cold snap.
Wow.
So it's pretty much, you know, more like summer in the East Coast. We do go into sometimes a day or two of 40s. To 60, you know, but rare. Yeah. It's mostly absolutely warm, very, very similar to, for instance, Jamaica, where we'll be talking about several of the herbs of Jamaica.
Right.
And, you know, let's lead off, Dr. Z, today. First of all, welcoming our listeners, and I'd like you to know that you can always sign up for our newsletter at naturalnurse.com. You can find Dr. Z at drznaturally.com, or send him an email also through naturalnurse.com, and he'll get back to you. And we both are very busy with the up-and-coming plans for the new year. And if you go to naturalnurse.com calendar, you'll see a lot of the classes that are coming up. We have classes all the time, and they are CE certified for nurses, nurse practitioners. Some also include naturopathic physicians, licensed massage therapists, licensed acupuncturists, registered dietitians, clinical nutritionists. So a lot of people take all kinds of classes with us. We have them posted at Natural Nurse Academy and also at naturalnurse.com under calendar of up-and-coming classes. Dr. Z and I also have written several books. One book, in fact, is called The Natural Medicine Chest. And right now you could get it on Amazon as an, I think they call it an ebook. Oh, a Kindle. They call it a Kindle book, right? So that's another way that you can get a hold of a lot of the things we'll be talking about today.
Yeah, that's exciting news. So delving into our subjects, both you and I have had interesting introductions to the rainforest and the people of the forest and the plants of the forest that we talk about in our book, The Natural Medicine Chest, the herbs from the shaman's garden, is the section that we devoted to our teachers who taught us about these plants. But we were kind of initiated into this whole exciting genre of ethnobotany through interesting experiences. Why don't you share a little bit about your experience, and then vice versa, I'll do so.
Sounds good, Dr. Z. And people can find a lot of these stories in our book, The Natural Medicine Chest. Also, we have written many other books. If you go to naturalnurse.com and go to books, you know, an idea for a holiday gift in case you still need something that really leads you into a life of health and wellness that Dr. Z and I have been pursuing for so many decades. So I started on a journey really in the 1960s, and I also went to Rutgers and Cornell University, and then I started studying the healing power of indigenous cultures throughout the world. So I started traveling to them. I also went to Spain, and I found in the Pyrenees Mountains the gypsy people, because I went there really because I minored in dance, and I was studying flamenco dancing. And wow. They do flamenco dancing there in the caves in the Pyrenees Mountains, where they actually live. And it doesn't look anything like the polished version of flamenco that you might see on TV. Not at all. This is really, really earthy stuff. They jump up on tables, and you know, they're not wearing all those fancy polka dot dresses either. Anyway, so it was an experience. But people in those areas were already using, not already, like still throughout history, historically, using herbal remedies for anything that might happen. You know, they didn't run to the doctor. They didn't take antibiotics. They used local plants, such as oregano, for instance, in Spain. And then I traveled in Mexico because I wanted to learn more about natural medicine. What led me to it is actually a similar story, and Dr. Z will share his, because I fell off a horse when I was teaching horseback riding. I was about maybe 15 years old, and I was told that I would have to get surgery in order to be able to walk again. But that just didn't ring true at all in my mind and in my being. So I searched out in the card catalog natural therapies, and I was pretty shocked that the doctor had not told me to use something like horsetail grass, which is very high in silica.
Dr. Kamai, let me ask you, why did you kind of reject surgery? What was the spiritual calling? Because that's kind of very important for listeners to know. Like, what was wrong with surgery and conventional medicine and your philosophical?
Well, nothing. I just thought, I couldn't schedule surgery right away. Remember, I'm a little girl here, right? Like, I'm 15. And there was no internet. Right. There was no electronic media, no credit cards. It was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But my dad, I told him that I thought, I just got a spiritual message, like you brought up, Dr. Z, that I wouldn't need surgery. I don't think it's true that I'll never be able to walk again without surgery. I didn't have any opinion against it. It's just we were in this waiting period because the inflammation had to decrease before they scheduled the surgery. So I said, rather than just wait and be in this horrific pain, I'm getting this message to seek out something else. So I went to the card catalog, and sure enough, there was a lot of things there by Edgar Cayce, by Dr. Bernard Jensen, who I was lucky enough to study with for 20 years later in life, from a whole slew of naturopathic physicians in your lineage, Dr. Z, who had all kinds of natural remedies and books about it. But yet I was shocked that my physician surgeon did not mention to take calcium, to use castor oil packs, to take vegetal silica in the form of horsetail grass. No mention of that. And I'm like, why didn't the doctor tell me to do this? So my dad, God bless him, dearly departed dad, he went along with me, and he had to actually write checks. There was no way to email money. There was no credit cards. He would write checks to these different places all around the country. And I got castor oil packs. I got horsetail grass. I got calcium and magnesium supplements. And I started using all of these. And each thing that I tried actually made me feel a little better. I used homeopathy as well because it was well used in Europe at that time, even for the royal family. So each thing that I tried made my back feel a little better. And when I went back to the doctor, he was like shocked and horrified to see me walk in because he wanted to schedule surgery. So I gave him the list of all the things I had done, figuring he's going to be so happy he can help all his clients to not need surgery. But that wasn't his reaction. Wow. And I was shocked, but also it was a good thing because it led me on my path to investigate healing.
Wow. And then tell us about when you went to Mexico and the I don't know if you were in a forest in Mexico or was it the arid part of Mexico?
No, where I was in Mexico is called Santa Cruz, and it's right on the coast of Mexico, about 1,000 miles south of San Francisco. So it's way down a little bit. There's an island right off that coast called Puerto Vallarta. And Puerto Vallarta is now a bit, well, before the COVID stuff, it was a very big hotspot for people to go for fun, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was good. And I lived there actually for over 2 years on and off. I found a woman there named Sonia, who is a curandera, which means somebody who is, you know, very trained in the natural healing arts. And I learned a lot from her. We went out in the forest and gathered medicinal and edible plants. We used them on her clients. We used them on herself. And that was one of my many sojourns into learning plant medicine, which has really been the focus of my entire life.
She would teach you not only about the use of the plants, but even picking them at different times and different types of picking, and that would even change the medicinal use of the plants.
That is so true. That really introduced me into that whole concept also of energy medicine.
Yeah.
But it's also explainable through phytochemistry, right? Because we would go to a certain tree and use the bark and the leaves. And she would say to go to this tree in the morning and rip the bark up. And then save it. And how we saved herbs was we tied them onto strings in the little palapa. There were no houses where I lived. It was just grass shacks. And they had strings across them made out of natural rope from the forest. And then you would tie the herbs to that and they hung down. So when you walked into the house, it was all plants hanging off the roof. But when you pulled that bark up, and picked it in the morning, it would act as an emetic. That means if someone had tea out of that, they would throw up. But if you went to that same tree in the evening when the sun is going down and rip the bark down instead, it would then act as a laxative and make someone more or less go to the bathroom. So it was a pretty toxic plant, actually. Yeah. But it was used sparingly and only for those times when people were thought to have food poisoning or some kind of bad infection that they wanted to release things. But later, I saw her use them for those purposes, and I was shocked that it actually had the intended effect, depending on how it was harvested and when it was harvested.
Wow. Yeah. I experienced similar things in my tutelage in the West Indies in Jamaica, you know, under Jamba and other shamans. So that's
right. And tell us about that, Suzanne. And I want people to know that a lot of these stories, along with tons of information about herbal medicine of all kinds, including our focus for today, herbs from the shaman's garden, which are more like tropical plants, in our book, The Natural Medicine Chest. So please do share your story, which really we were so shocked when we met about how similar it really was.
Right. So, you know, I'll start with me and then I'll backtrack and talk a little bit about Jamba. So I was a marine biology student. And at first in high school, I was taking a course in science, advanced science, with the late, great, honorable Doc of the Rock, Dr. Ernest Ernst, one of my professors who changed my life, me and my good friend, Mike Dorm, Kibrit Nagusa. Anyway, well, we traveled down there with my high school classmates to a very remote region of Jamaica. This was in 1980 when I first went down there. And, you know, we just fell in love with the place. I mean, can you imagine 18-year-old down there, and we were into diving and into scuba diving and into plants and things like that. I always had a love of plants growing up. Worked in the greenhouse in high school. My father was of Italian heritage and always told us stories about his farm growing up in Italy and the figs. And he taught me a lot about gardening and things like that. So I was always interested in that. And my great-grandmother was a folk healer. She actually told us stories of how a young boy burned himself with scalding water. And she told all the, this was before antibiotics and, you know, major hospitals, early 1900s. She had all the women in the neighborhood cut and peel potatoes, Dr. Kamai, and they did potato poultices on the boy's chest. And you know, he didn't have a scar on him. And just amazing stuff. So I come from those kind of heritage. So I've always had an interest in medicine and natural medicine. So while in Jamaica, I fell in love with the culture, and then I went off to college and major in marine biology. But then when I was down there once taking a graduate course in marine sciences, I got a case of dysentery. And back then, Imodium was a kind of prescription. It wasn't over the counter. So I went to the doctors, the Western doctor down there. I got the Imodium, and it didn't seem to be working. So I was, you know, feeling kind of weak and depleted. And so I approached Jamba, my friend down there, and one of his teachers, an elder bush doctor named Papatop, for help and advice. And they suggested that herbology and the way that their culture, they were Maroons, I could talk about that in a bit, if they prepared the medicine and they drank this tea, that would work where Western medicine wouldn't. So for 3 days, they took me out into the woods, the forest, and picked these different herbs. They picked allspice, cloves, guava, sea grape, ferns, and other secret maroon herbs prepared by them with what they call science, which is where there was drumming and some meditation involved and other types of things that I didn't understand. But anyway, I drank the tea, and the treatment got results that the conventional medicine didn't. And so here I am saying, wow, these guys, they didn't like graduate from college. They're not doctors, you know, white coat doctors, but yet they knew more about healing than the Western guy. And so that changed that. It was like a personal conversion. I was like, wow, that I'm just so impressed. So I changed my focus. Of course, President Reagan cut our grants in marine biology, and my advisor said, yeah, there's really no future in marine biology, you know, maybe study this holistic medicine thing. So I wanted to change my focus, and I remember going and studying for my courses, and during break, I'd go to the chemistry library at SUNY Stony Brook, and I found journals, Dr. Kamai. One was called Lloydia, and one was called the Journal of Ethnopharmacology, and there was another one called Planta Medica. And I was like, wow, there's actually all this science about herbal medicine. Of course, you know, being a scientist and a biology student, I was so enthusiastic. I read all I can about herbs, and then also about some of the cultural and spiritual aspects of plant healing. So I decided to switch careers and get the best scientific training and education that you can as a physician learning about herbs. And that was a whole kind of real serendipity too, stumbling upon naturopathic medicine, and went out again, like you, no internet, phone calls, writing, getting information. Most of the information about naturopathic medicine was not great, actually, back then, because the conventional doctors didn't really like it too much. But so I ended up going out to Seattle, and I went to Bastyr University of Natural Health Science so I could learn about the herbs from a scientific perspective. But every chance I got, I returned to Jamaica, and I asked Jamba if I could be his apprentice. And he was kind of hesitant, you know, for the beginning. But then in a dream, his grandmother's spirit visited him and said that he could trust me with this sacred secret knowledge, which I thought was just amazing. And so he agreed and said, yeah, I want you to come back just and spend a lot of time with me, and we'll take you to different parts of the island, and we'll learn all about the herbs and things like that. And, you know, I would bring people down, friends, family, and their life was radically changed by living like a Jamaican countryman in the bush. And so after I graduated from naturopathic school, I started to become like a modern medicine man and document these experiences on film and taped interviews with Jamba. And that's when I met you too. And we started a radio program, and then I invited my good friend Asher, who's a professional photographer, to document to Jamaican bush, and all that was all chronicled to become our amazing book, The Natural Medicine Chest. And so, you know, now, and then we decided, Jamba was like, well, you know, maybe you could bring people down here and train them and, you know, pass this information on. So we formed a company called Eco Tours for Cures, which is an adventure travel company, which focuses on ethnobotany and cultural journeys, so that people like, you know, massage therapists and photographers and naturopaths and herbalists and other people could learn about this and witness this, because this is something you just don't see in America or Western cultures, that so many people are immersed in herbal medicine. And we've had herbal leaders like Gaia Herbs, Rick Scalzo, who was a luminary in the field, and so many people. We also had Jamaica's most esteemed herbalist, Dr. Diane Robertson, come and lecture for us. And so many renowned herbal people have spent time in Jamaica and connected with Jamba. Well, he passed in 2014, and, you know, we miss him, but we feel his presence, and we actually have photographic proof that his spirit came to visit us.
Yeah, that's an amazing picture.
Yeah, I should send it to Paranormal Caught on Film, that TV show, because this is like practically irrefutable evidence, you know, of things like that. Actually,
let's describe, since you brought it up, let's describe what that was, because we were at a fire.
I was around a fire, and one of his best friends, Prince Francis, who does some traveling with us, and he's a musician and herbalist himself. We were beating the drums in a drum circle in a trance-like state, really. I mean, like in Maroon, the way that the Coromanti people would play the drums, really deep, deep drumming. And then we called his spirit out. And I was just taking pictures randomly, you know. The next morning, I look at my pictures, my digital pictures, and there's his image. Now, what's interesting is we have a picture of him in the 1990s looking like the same exact thing. And Jamba would always be master of the fire and master of making our sacred teas that we'd have. We'd have a different tea made from Jamaican bush for every day of the year. And boy, when I showed that to the Jamaicans, they were just, some of them were petrified, because they really felt that his spirit was there. And some of them, you know, they yelled out science, which means, you know, kind of from the beyond, you know, and some of them were just creeped out. They didn't even want to look at it. But it was, I tell you, what an amazing experience to call out his name, and that he shows up on film the next day.
It was like a real imprint.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot we don't know. And there's a lot, even TV shows now, and, you know, unexplained phenomena. But somehow that's all linked to healing and health, as well as the powerful, powerful essence that we find in herbs.
Yeah, that was, you know, the long and the short of it is there's so many wonderful tropical herbs that we have experienced down in the, and still do, because we still take people down to the West Indies. Actually, we're planning a trip in late February, early March. So if listeners are interested in traveling with us to the West Indies, you know, they have good COVID restrictions there. It's pretty, we're pretty remote, and it's still a good time to travel, I think, to the West Indies and learn about these different herbs. Like, you know, one of the most interesting plants that I think is really amazing is sarsaparilla, which we use even here now for Lyme disease. There was an old article back in the New England Journal of Medicine in the 1940s, which talked about sarsaparilla and its ability to clean the blood. This is, you know, they use old terminology, but clean the blood of different toxins. Now, you know, you could translate that into science speak too, like cleaning the blood means stimulating the liver, stimulating the spleen to filter the blood by the these Kupffer cells, which are these in-house macrophages.
Well, let me stop you there, Dr. Z, because that's what's so interesting with someone like yourself, because you honor the ancient and the spiritual. You and I have both learned about a lot of the edible and medicinal wild plants around us, wherever we are, as well as in other places. Like today, we're talking about more of a tropical Jamaican kind of herb. By the way, all these plants are also here in Florida and on most of the Caribbean islands. But after we hear the old stories, which we honor our teachers and, you know, share that we found them that way always, then we also are interested in the actual scientific literature that backs these ancient uses. That's what's so amazing. And that's why I am fully convinced and work very hard right now. My focus is to have conventional medicine actually initiate the use of natural medicine as the primary intervention, because it is much safer, which an extremely lower incidence of adverse effects, much more efficacious many times, although it might work more slowly rather than just stop symptoms, and much less expensive than pharmaceutical drugs, especially if you look at societal costs as well as an individual cost, even though it might not be free, like you think drugs are free. If you have health insurance, they're not free. So it really should be, it makes sense scientifically as well as traditionally to be the first intervention. Then if it doesn't work, and of course it has to be along with mind-body work, proper diet, daily exercise, then you can always use something that's more dangerous, such as drugs. And of course, surgery can be life-saving when needed. It's just that they're out of order.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and that's a whole, I want to schedule a show, maybe our next show together, where we talk about the history of medicine. I was interviewed by a producer, and he's producing a show called Plants, Not Pills, and I outline the whole history of medicine as to why that actually is. But that's a story for another day.
It's true. But back to, you know, this wonderful plant that you're talking about.
Sarsaparilla grows, again, all across the world. But the tropical sarsaparilla, I mean, we see types of sarsaparilla that grows here on the East Coast of the United States. But the one from the Caribbean, South America, Mexico, and Central America is the type that's most prized for medicine. So they call it Smilax, that's the Latin. We know sarsaparilla or sarsaparilla, as they say, as a flavor enhancer in root beer. And we know that in the old US pharmacopoeia until 1950, it was used for the treatment of syphilis. And there are many documented tests where people went negative. You know, and syphilis is a tricky thing. Sometimes it hides and comes back.
Well, let's just mention that the kind of microorganism that is spirochetal.
Yes.
So therefore, that would trigger for a physician like yourself, someone who has Lyme disease.
Exactly. So, and then you look at the, even though they don't have Lyme disease in China, you see, you mentioned that the research on herbal medicine across the world, we look at the literature in other, you know, tropical rainforest worlds of, places in the world. Like, for instance, you know, China has southern and tropical forests as part of its country. India does, all over the world, across the equator. And if that society has high-level science, they probably have looked at their own traditional medicine. So I find it interesting. Some of the literature I would have to not go to Jamaica, to the University of West Indies library, but I would have to actually look at some studies done in China or India, in the Indian literature. And sure enough, they have been using these plants for centuries, and the scientists have extracted some of the medicinal components. And some of them actually were studied in human trials as well. So you'll learn quite a bit about these things. And sarsaparilla was in human trials on serious spirochetal disease. There's a disease that's spread by rats in China quote, well, I guess it could be anywhere, but leptospirosis. And it made people go negative. So we know it killed those spirochetes. So, of course, sarsaparilla has been adopted by many Lyme literate physicians to treat people with deep, deep Lyme disease. And it's been very, very successful.
And now let's talk about the plant itself, because this grows all over, not only, right? Doesn't this grow in the Northeast as well, different species of it?
So I'm sure. So then you look at, you talk to native people from the Northeast here and you say, and they're like, yeah, we've used that for like bites of insects when there's blood poisoning, which means the insect venom or potentially snake or whatever spider bite gets into the blood and starts causing, you know, some spreading of the toxin.
So isn't this like for people just to picture this Smilax plant, this sarsaparilla? It's a vine. It's a briar. It grows around towards on the ground. And isn't it what a briar rabbit used to hide in?
Yeah, probably. So, and the Jamaicans make, it's part of the Roots Man tonic. And that's the other part of sarsaparilla, is it may impact the human hormonal system in a positive way, maybe the adrenals, maybe even the sexual system. And that's why it was put in these tonics that people drank as they got older. We know it has a high mineral content and it's a lymphatic purifier, so that when people's lymphatics are all messed up, they sometimes get pustules or eczema, psoriasis, you know, eruptions. And so sarsaparilla was used for many millennia for people that had eruptions on their skin. They would drink the sarsaparilla tea, and then they called it a blood cleanser, or what they call an alterative. That's what we call it in herbal medicine. And that means something that builds health by cleaning the bloodstream out. And what are you cleaning the bloodstream out? Probably endotoxins, which are various microbial byproducts and things like that.
What part of this plant is used?
The root.
So the sarsaparilla, that's why it's part of the roots tonic.
That's right. So so that's one that, you know, has gone on to, supposedly it's the secret ingredient in Guinness beer, which gives it some of its flavoring. Probably a secret, but anyway, so there's all kinds of other indications of sarsaparilla for, you know, used in Chinese medicine, but I've used it for many, many years and very successful for these things. And I you know, hand it to Jamba for introducing it to me, and then myself going deep in the studies and learning about it at a very high level, you know, as a mad scientist level.
And where would somebody get that? I mean, is it available online or does
it
have
to? Actually called, I buy mine. I use the Chinese name for it, which is called Tufu Ling. And it comes in a highly concentrated version, which is 5 to 1, which means that 1/5 of a teaspoon gives you 5 grams, which is very strong. You know, herbal medicine has different strengths. You know, teas are the weakest, very effective sometimes still. Most of the world still uses teas, but less effective than a tincture, less effective than a strong decoction, which is where they boil the herbs for a long time. And then you have these other extracts, fluid extracts, solid extracts. So in each of these cases, you're concentrating the medicinal components. But yeah.
So if people actually look up online sarsaparilla, it's easily available.
Tufu Ling.
You know, and in that way, you're talking about it as a Chinese version. But even, you know, I wonder, and I don't know, this is a question that I don't know. You might not know either. I'll have to look into it, because it's also available as a homeopathic. And very often homeopathics have a different use. But I would imagine, since it's a 200, that's something that might be great for deep-rooted spirochetal illnesses, possibly like Lyme.
Yeah, and other things like joint aches or psoriasis that's very deep in the body, almost what they call a miasm, which is almost like a genetic expression of the psoriasis or a deep problem with the cells. So yeah, that's really how I would use the sarsaparilla. It tastes great too. Many herbs are so, I remember decocting some teas, try this tea, man. And man, it was like, whoa, you gotta be a heavy duty herbalist to drink that down. But the sarsaparilla is very pleasant.
Yeah, and they also call it chainy root. So it has so many different names. Exactly. Maybe because it looks like a chain when it's growing on the bottom of the forest. You know, it all grows together.
It does look like a chain. And the roots intertwine and they form a thick, thick chain, which they actually use as rope. Yeah, so interesting. So fascinating when you're studying ethnobotany. And then you interview people and ask how they've used it or how their grandparents or parents taught them to use it. And, you know, how you amass the information. And then you go back to the laboratory or to the PubMed, the National Library of Medicine, and look up some of the papers. And
right. Look at what you're talking about. National Library of Medicine. I mean, this knowledge is so well documented and so well known. So I would say the only thing that stops this from being the medicine of choice for the people is politics and the pharmaceutical industry, because they can't say anymore that it's not studied. They can't say that, oh, well, that's just an old wives' tale, which usually mean that something works or it wouldn't become an old wives' tale.
That's
so you
right.
just have it's to wonder how long can this information be repressed?
Remember, Dr. Michael Murray said, if natural medicine works, then it has to be scientific. We just don't maybe know the science yet, or they haven't bothered to look at it because it's not profitable to know the science. Although that's not really true. You know, in the future, we're going to have another medicine hunter. Once we get her scheduled, she wrote a book called The Plant Hunter.
Yep, I'm ready to. You just have to help me get in touch with her PR person.
She wrote Scientist's Quest for Nature's Next Medicine. So she's another person that goes into the forest. She has a different bent, whereas you and I will go into the forest and still use those herbs in an ethnobotanical sense, in the herbal sense. She actually will then try to get that information to the pharmaceutical companies to make a medicine, you know, which has merits too, because, you know, most herbs came from drugs, Dr. Kamai.
Well, you know, just like everything, that's a double-edged sword, Dr. Z, because if we can replicate the natural plant, which is not always really true, we might be able to replicate one isolated active, but never could we replicate what we call in hemp medicine, and we can do a show on hemp because I'm actually on the education committee of the nurses, ACNA, which is the American Cannabis Nurses Association. So I do a lot of research with cannabis. And there's something called the entourage effect, which is true with all herbs, which says the full spectrum of all the actives that are naturally occurring work together to give an outcome different than any one isolate. And while we can copy that isolate in a laboratory and make a pharmaceutical drug, we're not able to make that full entourage of all the naturally occurring chemicals.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the other hand, what about, this is another thing in herbal medicine, which is big, and we saw this happen. I'll remind you, Dr. Z, here's another plant we can talk about also, which is noni.
Yes.
So we actually taught to Jamaican pharmacists, I remember that day, about noni. Now, noni is available as an herbal drink and as an herbal isolate, which you can buy, but it's a mushy fruit. It's also called duppy soursop because it looks like a ghost, and it does because it's sort of white and see-through, and duppy means spirit in right. Jamaican, sharing that way they say that. But noni is phenomenally medicinal. And we were teaching this group of scientists about it from a Western perspective. And these were people, which we also find so often with indigenous people, that they grow up somewhere and their grandmother uses these natural remedies and they wind up poo-pooing it and rejecting it and wanting to be more Western. Right. And this particular group was funny because these were people who had grown up on the islands. They were Native Jamaicans, and they had taken that path of becoming much more, you know, intellectual and much more trained in a Western sense. And they all moved to the United States and they were pharmacists, quite brilliant. But they really had basically rejected. Then they got into a multi-level company here in the United States and they were buying Noni juice for something like $40 a bottle.
Yeah.
And then they wound up coming back and taking that class with us out in the field, us teaching them, which is pretty funny because they're the ones who grew up with this knowledge. And we're sharing with them about all the scientifically valid medicinal components of Noni. But then the next morning, I wonder if you remember this, the next morning we went outside and this group of very educated and highly respected pharmacists had more or less stripped off all the Noni fruits off all the trees that are available. Now, that is something else that happens, which the plant hunter people are really talking about in terms of the sustainability of using herbal medicine.
Right.
Because yeah, if you find out it's great and then you pull out all the plants and they can't self-propagate anymore, then that's the end of the availability.
Right. So there has to be a kind of a balance where we can make sure that that's true. You know, if your goal, Dr. Kamai, to make plant medicine, you know, the primary focus of every doctor, how can our earth in its current state support that? So these are all very deep questions.
Right. So that's where drug chemistry actually could sort of come in. Because if there is an active that gives one of the healing properties and that you can make in a laboratory without pulling out more plants, you know, perhaps that could be helpful. But that's why I love energy medicine and homeopathy, because then you can use like a few molecules of the plant and expand its use tremendously. You can also do that with energy medicine such as radionics. And that's a topic for another day. But you can actually take, let's say, that Noni fruit, the Duppy Soursop, and you can pick up its energy and then make other remedies from it. And we use that in energy medicine. But, you know, I love really Noni. Now, it has a sour smell, like a pew kind of smell, like it went bad. But yet it doesn't taste that way.
Right. Very interesting. And it's interesting because it's one of those trees that the male and female are very different, almost like some of the evergreens where there's male and female trees. You know, a lot of trees are just mixed, have male and female flowers on the one tree, but Duppy has a male and female. Now the male plants, they look very different. It's interesting when you study that. And Jamba and Prince Francis taught me that it's the male that they use the root. Of course, that's not sustainable unless they, you know, cut a piece of the root and replant it, which is what they do. But the root actually has been proven in the scientific literature to raise testosterone. Now, there's not many plants claim to raise testosterone, but really don't do so. Maybe they increase libido or they have another mechanism of action of how that happens. But the research, particularly out of Chinese literature, shows that what the Noni does is it protects the very delicate cells in the testes called the Leydig cells and the cells of Sertoli. So the Sertoli cells make the sperm and the Leydig cells make testosterone. Many cases of low testosterone in men come from damage to these very sensitive cells due to chemicals, free radicals, xenoestrogens, plastics, you name it, even lead. I had a case at school where the guy was a, you know, carpenter doing a lot of work around the, you know, for his profession, and too much lead. He was a young guy in his 30s, he couldn't, his sperm count was so low and his testosterone was so low. It was like, and of course the allopaths are ready to just give him testosterone cream. And I'm saying, well, that's fine, but let's look at the cause of the problem. So it turned out that we had to get rid of the lead and things like that. But I used a Noni to protect his sensitive cells from more damage, because, you know, generally there's probably some cells that are still alive and good, and some are damaged, true. And sure enough, through the use of the Noni, which again was, you know, we got it at a Chinese apothecary, because the Chinese have done a tremendous amount of research on Noni and its effect. He was able to go and have kids again. Wasn't that a great story?
It's an excellent story. And that was with no side effects of any kind, where when you start taking testosterone injections, they can be very, very useful, but also can cause cancer.
Right.
So, you know, it has to be
but
balanced.
We got to the root of the cause, and the Noni acted like a shield to protect the testes. So,
but of course, as always with naturopathic input, I'm sure you also discuss with him diet and a range of other things, not just one.
Yeah,
pill.
Plus he had to wear a mask so that he wouldn't keep, because, you know, that was his profession. So unless he, you know, I don't know, quit and found a new job or knew something, he had to do his carpentry work and construction work intelligently, you know, which means proper precautions, proper personal.
Because he's constantly in sort of breathing in all these toxic
every
chemicals.
Time you work on an old house, you get lead dust. It just is a matter of that thing. And these guys, you know, not to say that all blue collar guys are the same way, of course not, that would be prejudicial, but, you know, some of them are like, hey, yeah, you know, they just work with reckless abandon, you know, and they don't have this consciousness of because they're self-employed. OSHA can't come after you because you're not gonna call OSHA on yourself. You know,
this is true.
They're self-employed, they're like, they don't wear a mask, just like mechanics don't wear gloves, and they get all the petrochemicals on their hands. So anyway, to make a long story short, we also used herbs to kind of purify a lot of these toxins out of his body too, that we see in the bush, you know, because they have a lot of different herbs that we use to purify the bloodstream. But there was a great story before we run out of time. I want you to.
Oh, let's talk about our trip to Jamaica, because God willing, people are going to be able to travel again soon.
Yeah, well, it's coming up on February 28th and 5 days into March. And we're going to be learning about a lot of these plants that we're talking about today, pepper elder and bitter melon, which I want you to tell the story of the lady with the diabetes, and rock fern and shame lady and different types of cactus and susumba, vervain, where real cashews come from, and ram goat, dashalong, vervain. I mean, there's a myriad of things, of plants. The sea grape, which is what the shaman gave me, that stops diarrhea, and it's very, very high in tannins and very nutritious for us. And we'll learn from some of the great Jamaican herbalists about the foods that they use, bananas. And
well, we have a great website where people could see more, but I just want to point out, Dr. Z, that you do need our web person for the site, Echo Tours for Cures. We have tons of information there, but you do need to put up the new date for the 2022.
It should be good.
Okay, no, it says March 7th, 2020. We need the 2022 date.
Okay, so I asked the web guy to do that. But okay.
Yeah, just change the date. All the other things on here, you can see a lot of our other trips that we had. And there's a lot of fun besides herbal stuff. You know, we go swimming and waterfalls.
You
and
go on
hikes.
the Facebook / Eco Tours for Cures Jamaica. And there's a lot of great video clips and pictures about our trip there. Yeah, but I'll attend to that. Yeah, so there's so many things that we can learn about. Like, you know, it's interesting. Oleander, now that grows in Florida.
A lot, yes.
Yeah, now that is poisonous. So you have to be a professional to use that. But that's called the digitalis of the tropics. It has the same cardiac glycosides that digitalis does, foxglove, which was made into a conventional heart drug for people with congestive heart failure and buildup of fluid. So turns out that the oleander plant, and again, don't use it by yourself. You know, this is.
I would say that's one to just look at for a while.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, tropics. You know what Paracelsus said is everything's poison, nothing's poison. You just have to learn the dose. And you know, naturopathic doctors, we take boards where we have to know the toxic doses of all these different plants. So it's interesting. So yeah, some of the other plants that we'll learn about would be the cactus. Now, cactus has been shown to lower the blood sugar. And it's the fruit of the cactus that does that, the nopal fruit, which I think grows all over the place in warm climates there. They call it tuna cactus. I don't know why they call it tuna cactus. I think it's called Opuntia is the species. But, you know, some of it grows, like I have cactus in my garden here in the Northeast. It grows in the high mountains in Colorado. When I was out in Denver recently to visit my daughter, we found all kinds of cactus growing out there that's pretty hardy. But some of it's tropical. And this tuna cactus is fabulous for burns and the stomach. They use the juice of the cactus, and the fruit actually has been shown to lower the CRP, which is the amount of inflammation in your heart and body. So that's one to really see and draws out boils, high in vitamin C.
So some people may know it as the prickly pear cactus.
Prickly pear.
It's pretty common too, because it grows those beautiful red fruits that are quite delicious if you can get past the stickers.
That's right. And there's a way that they'll teach you. I think they throw it in the fire and it burns off the glochids, the little stickers there. So that's interesting. And did you know that kola nut came from the West Indies, and they call it Bissi nut?
You know, I was looking at that, and I did not know that that's what Bissi nut is.
Yeah,
so that name I never heard of, but certainly kola nut we use, because when I formulate herbal remedies for many of the herb companies, we sell kola nut, and people do need to know that that's one of the things that does have caffeine in it.
Yes, I think it came from Africa originally and was brought over, like many plants, to the West Indies and other tropical areas. It's used as a stimulant, antidote for poisoning, and has a lot of theobromine, which is an alkaloid and cousin to caffeine, plus caffeine. And of course, it's part of, cola beverages and things like that. But in Jamaica, they used it as an antidote for poisoning and detoxification. So that's interesting. You learn about when people do these types of detoxifications when you go on the trip, the Eco Tours for Cures trip to Jamaica in February. So we're hoping that folks are interested. Now, castor is very interesting. Castor is one of the things that you talked about in your treatment of the back, Dr. Kamai. So, and you know, castor grows in a lot of warm climates. We can grow it as an annual here in the West Coast. Mine just died when it got cold, but it can be a noxious.
How tall did it grow? Because people all over actually have at state fairs and things, they have, you know, grow the tallest castor plant.
It's really this year it got about 9 feet, and that was one season, which is pretty impressive.
That is.
Yeah. But you know, once I grew a 12-foot castor, people would slow down and look at my garden, because I had it in the front. They'd be like, what the heck is that? So, but castor is very medicinal. It ties into what you were saying about Edgar Cayce. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. And so many people, in fact, almost everyone, I get them to at least try using a castor oil pack, because I think it is one of the most healing modalities that anyone can use. It's super inexpensive. It's super effective. And it has such a wide range of healing that it can do. Also, if people are already on pharmaceuticals, since you're using it externally, you don't have to be as concerned in terms of herb-drug interactions. So it's a very simple thing. on the website, naturalnurse.com, you can just search castor oil pack, and I have a full and complete detailed information, as we have in all of our books, which are also all listed on naturalnurse.com, such as our arthritis book and our natural medicine chest and other books, how to do a castor oil pack, which is an external treatment. And you just take castor oil, put it on flannel, put it on any area of the body that you feel needs more, either for pain or for detoxification. It's amazing, Dr. Z. I use that on really thousands of patients in my, you know, almost 60 years of practicing natural medicine. And one person I'm thinking of had a very bad kidney illness. And we put the castor oil pack on their kidneys, which is just across the lower back, for about an hour a day. And it pulled out so many toxins from their kidneys. Of course, they were also doing juicing and lots of other things, that you could see the outline of kidneys on their back clearly.
Oh.
And that was from all the toxic substances being pulled out right through the castor oil pack on their skin. And there's some really intense regular scientific studies, for instance, in terms of helping with delivery when people use it, not in early pregnancy, it could also cause problems. So you have to know what you're doing. Right. But castor is so medicinal, but also is extremely dangerous if you don't know how to gather it correctly.
Well, I know. And make the oil, like they actually make their own oil. We have a workshop at our Eco Tours for Cures trip where we actually make the castor oil. Of course, the West Indian people and people around the world have been making the oil from scratch for thousands of years, maybe.
Well, it's because the plant's name is even Ricinus communis. So it's because it has ricin in it, that super deadly toxic chemical, when it's not prepared correctly.
That's right. So they know how to do it. So you can kind of learn that or see it, at least watch it being made. I thought it was fascinating to watch it being done.
Well, if you buy prepared castor oil, it's not a problem. I guess they do it correctly as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, but the folks do it down there. They don't go to the, you know, Jamba would make his own. He wouldn't go to the local stores to, you know, buy it. He would just make it himself. So there's ways to do it. And that's the kind of beauty of ethnobotany, is watching how plants are used in medicine and also building homes and for foods and just the whole life. I mean, plants really intertwine in our whole existence, not only as medicine, but for economic sustenance as well.
So, boy, oh boy, that time went really fast. We're just about at
yeah,
the end of the hour.
We just scratched the surface of an amazing array of tropical plants. There's so many other great plants in the rainforests that we see too. You know, some of the major plants that are used for eye diseases we see in the rainforest, like Pilocarpus jabirundi. Remember seeing that in Jamaica, and that's used to, you know, work with glaucoma. I mean, just so many things. We could go on and on and on, but we'll have a couple more programs on plants with some other experts.
Of course we will. And with also throwing out, Dr. Z, that you're on a project of taking on more individual patients. If anyone's interested in a private consult, they can get in touch with us and I'll get them in touch with you. You can email naturalnurse.com or drznaturally.com, and that's something that you can set up, because now there's all that online stuff available.
That's right. So we ran out of time. So we're always happy to share our knowledge and information, and hopefully you'll join us for some of our fun shops and excursions. So until such time, we want to wish you health and happiness. And always remember to stay healthy.
Stay healthy.
Nice to see you, Doc. Bye-bye.